Breakfast Show here on The Breakfast Show. hey, right now, before we get into an awesome interview with Jeremy Dixon talking all about vegan egg alternatives, which is a fascinating topic. Look, I've got this book in front of me, 9 Ways to Prevent Diabetes by Donald Hall. And one of the big aspects of this idea of diabetes and type 2 diabetes and its prevention is diet and health. We're going to be talking about diet and health with Jeremy Dixon just in a little bit. But hey, if you want a book with further information, which is a bit of an informational book, you know, Jeremy Dixon in the realm of cookbooks and health books and those kinds of things. But regarding, you know, some information, hey, preventing diabetes, 0491-064-669, #9 is the code word to text in, and we'll give this one to you absolutely for free. But now, look, I've talked enough about him. On the line, we have none other than Jeremy Dixon. Jeremy, how are you going this morning?
My fine, good to hear from you.
Hey, likewise, dude, we are stoked to have you on the show with us to talk about, I think, an incredibly interesting topic, vegan egg alternatives.
Yes, very exciting.
I'm actually interested in this one because, so from 2019 to the beginning of 2024, I had been vegan and not eating eggs. And I've started recently eating eggs again. And the big reason is that my fiance is gluten-free and it's one of the kind of breakfast foods that's easy to make together. She eats eggs because she's locked out of bread and oats and all of those things. And so I'd love information on this. Like, you know, maybe get me back on the full vegan, vegan track again with vegan egg alternatives. Please open the door for us. Let us know, Jeremy, where can we go with this one?
Great. Yes. I've got a couple of recipes to share with you from my cookbook 8. And, I'll start with simple and head to complex because the complex ones can be slightly harder. Mm-hmm. But the ultimate easy vegan egg alternative is basically a tofu scramble.
Oh, love it. Tell us about it.
And it's amazing and delicious. So you can have it like on toast, or it's amazing in like a breakfast burrito or something like that. Mm-hmm. Very, very quick to put together. So I'll probably give you my favorite version of it. And this is one, this is basically a zucchini tofu scramble. So what you do is you start off with a pan, you put a bit of oil in it, you put your zucchini in, just slice them up or dice them up fine. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have something else in there as well. It is optional. Then obviously you throw in some tofu. And I generally find it's best to use firm tofu.
Yep.
Because it sticks together. And also crumble it. Don't chop it into cubes.
Okay.
It just looks a bit more kind of organic. So just kind of crumble it up as kind of fine as you can. Mm-hmm. Throw in a half cup of onions. That always adds a bit of flavour as well.
Okay.
And now the eggy bit. So firstly, you want some turmeric powder because you want to make it...
Ah, a bit yellowy.
Yellow, yep. So turmeric's a great... And with turmeric, you only want probably like a quarter or an eighth of a teaspoon. You don't want to start bringing in those kind of turmeric flavours purely for colour.
Yep.
It definitely helps. The other eggy kind of an ingredient is savoury yeast flakes.
Ah, yeah.
You can find these in most supermarkets. So just kind of little flaky, dusty things. I think Bragg's their brand, and so most supermarkets will have those. So get some savoury yeast flakes. It kind of gives kind of like a cheesy kind of a very, very savoury flavour.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's savoury yeast flakes.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome. I love a bit of tofu scramble, especially you said there in the breakfast burritos. Yum ass.
Yeah, exactly.
How would you fill out that breakfast burrito?
One more ingredient before you carry on.
Oh, yeah.
This one ingredient. First, there's another ingredient called black Himalayan salt.
Ah.
And this is like, you know, you normally get pink Himalayan salt, you can get a black one. And it has a very sulfury flavor, which eggs have. So you basically, instead of using normal salt, you buy this black Himalayan salt and sprinkle that over. So you've got the combination of the savory yeast giving kind of a savory flavor, the salty black salt flavors, and also the turmeric powder. And it really kind of gives it a very kind of eggy kind of look.
Oh.
And so you just basically stir it up, fry it up until it's kind of ready, and then throw it on your burrito, put it in your breakfast burrito.
What would you fill that breakfast burrito out with? You've got your eggs there. What else would you chuck in it?
Yes, I've got an amazing one in that book as well. So basically, you get in the breakfast burrito, I've got you don't put, you can put courgettes, and that's kind of optional, but so does zucchini. Mm. So basically, you just keep your burrito, throw on your scrambled eggs, and the best ingredients are obviously some sliced avocado, and you can never, that is amazing. Usually, I quite like throwing on just a bit of wilted spinach, is quite nice as well. Some fresh capsicum is really nice as well. And also, really nice is doing like your mini hash brown. Like either get some hash browns and fry them up. Or even just grate some potato and quickly fry it up as well. So just a bit of potato in there. So that potato, the scrambled tofu, the avocado, and obviously perhaps a little bit of coriander or parsley or something in there to give a bit of freshness. And that makes the most sensational breakfast burrito.
Dude, that sounds fantastic. Okay, I think you've got us salivating in the studio as usual, as always. We're one recipe down. I'm sure we've got more to go, but we're already like I can hear the gurgling noises from stomachs all around the studio. Hey, that sounds awesome. Okay, so we've started off with a tofu scramble egg replacement.
Yep.
Where do we go from there?
Okay, fake fried eggs. Are you ready?
Okay, fake fried eggs. Give it to us.
So what you want to do is create out of, it's kind of a starchy mix. You basically create two mixes. You create the yolk and then you create the egg white.
Okay.
And it's my recipe book number 8. And it took me a while to perfect this recipe because if it goes too kind of runny or thick, it doesn't really work. So check out the recipe. But basically the recipe is this. So for the yolk, you mix up 1 cup of butternut pumpkin. So basically that's been kind of cooked. So basically and that gives you kind of yellowness.
Uh-huh.
You want two tablespoons of corn flour or cornstarch.
Mm-hmm.
You want, and that kind of sticks it together, an 1/8 teaspoon of turmeric powder, obviously a bit more yellowness. And this is a killer, 1/4 teaspoon of mustard powder.
Ooh.
Ooh, okay.
So you kind of, imagine that kind of, and that's kind of, yolkies kind of do have kind of a slight mustard taste.
Sure.
1/4 teaspoon of the black salt.
Uh-huh.
5 tablespoons of water and 1 tablespoon of oil. So you mix that around and put or in a blender, and so it's really, really smooth and actually yolk.
Uh-huh.
Then you want to make the white, and the white is 1/2 cup of rice flour, 1/4 cup of corn flour, 1 cup of plant-based milk, one that doesn't have sweetener in it, and then 1 teaspoon of black Himalayan salt.
Mm.
So you've kind of got your two mixtures there. So you have them there in little bowls, and then I put like a 2 tablespoon scoop or a tablespoon scoop in each of them. You kind of get your nonstick pan ready with a little bit of oil. And then what you do is you basically spoon on 2 tablespoons of the white. And that spreads out to become the white.
Mm-hmm.
And then you grab a tablespoon of the egg yolk and you nicely put it on top. And that's a bit firmer. And so you basically got this lovely white and the yolk in the middle.
Mm.
And that'll cook for a couple of minutes until it's kind of, you see it kind of turns from liquid into kind of, less liquidy, and then you flip it over, and then for about another probably 20 seconds or so, and then serve it on your bread with some smashed avocado, a few chili flakes and some parsley, and it really tastes nice, looks pretty close to eggs.
I'd love to ask you a question here, because I mean, like fried eggs, these replacement fried eggs sound awesome. I mean, fried eggs is probably one of my favorite way to eat eggs. For a fried egg sandwich for breakfast, like
something perfect.
Like it's awesome, and this replacement sounds cool. But a lot of people eat eggs out of the claim that there is like a large amount of protein that they're intaking through this egg consumption, and I mean sharing this idea, like I love the idea of replacement eggs and you know getting back to fully plant-based, but do you think that this will like affect the protein intake? Is there something we can do about that?
Great question. Could probably put some protein powder in the white. I'll probably have to experiment with that. Might help as well. Also, don't forget with the eggs, like basically your yolk is pretty much fat and your white is where all the protein is.
Sure.
So so that's how that kind of works. So, yeah, so these will not be super high protein things.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's something you could probably put some protein powder or some fava bean powder or something into the white. That would help it definitely. But the thing with protein is you can kind of – you could serve it with things that have high in protein, like serve it with some tofu or some other things as well. So
cool.
There are other things you can do.
Oh, dude, that sounds epic. I love the solution here is, hey – get some protein in the protein.
And also, you said there was butternut pumpkin in there. And look, pumpkin has more protein than most people would think. So you've already got a bit of protein in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Let's get on to our next one. We're getting more complicated, apparently, with
okay, we're now going to make an omelette.
Oh.
Okay, an eggless omelet. This is interesting. All right.
We're getting fringe here, so buckle up. So this one here is actually made of chickpea flour.
Okay.
So the recipe here is half a cup of chickpea flour, a cup of corn flour, a quarter of a teaspoon of turmeric to make it yellow, mm-hmm. half a teaspoon of the black salt to make it sulfury,
mm-hmm.
3/4 of a cup of water, and you mix that round so you've kind of got a mixture that looks kind of like a omelette mix. So again, you get your nonstick pan, bit of oil, and you pour this in, and it produces a really nice, basically like a flat omelette. So basically, it creates a flat omelette. It's basically kind of like, and basically cook it probably a minute or 30 seconds each side. And then it's quite, the corn flour kind of gives it kind of a poly, kind of a eggy kind of a feel. So the texture like is not jiggliness. Perfect, but it kind of, it's a bit of jiggliness there.
Yeah.
And then it's obviously it's what you put in your omelette as well. So basically, you know, fry up some mushrooms and some spinach and put it in the middle as well. Bit of a sprinkle of parsley,
mm-hmm.
and you've got yourself a chickpea omelette.
Yum.
Oh, dude, that sounds epic.
Mm.
I used to love eating omelettes, mm-hmm. and that, like, I like the only kind of form of egg I eat at the moment is like fried egg. Because usually omelettes, like, a lot of people make omelettes with like quite a lot of cheese in it and these kinds of things.
Yes, exactly.
But we're looking at an omelette here that is just like cheese free, egg free. We're getting it, dude. But sounds amazing. That's so good. What's your optimum like omelette vegetables that you would throw in?
Well, I'm a massive fan of mushrooms.
Okay.
Mm.
How do you feel about mushrooms, Izzy?
Yeah, mushrooms are good. They're a good source of protein as well. So that helps up your protein intake.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing nicer than just a simple a tomato and onion omelette. That's quite nice as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love a bit of capsicum in there. I love it. I love getting fresh with the omelettes, you know, just chucking lots of stuff in there. All right, Jeremy, look. We've got 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. Is there another tier of replacement?
Well, I'm actually going to pivot now. So in the meat world, what goes with eggs?
Okay. Yeah, give us some
bacon.
Thoughts. Bacon. Okay.
So I'm going to give you my recipe for pretend bacon strips.
Okay, pretend bacon strips.
Bacon happening over here.
Yeah. So we're getting even wilder now.
Okay.
So this one's here, my favourite ones actually use a product called tempeh, which I think you get in most supermarkets, which is kind of like tofu, except it kind of ferments the whole soybean. Mm-hmm. It's got it holds together quite well. It's got quite a nice nutty flavour.
Yeah.
So the recipe is, so effectively, you want to slice the tempeh into like little kind of bacon strips quite thinly, and just start frying it in a frying pan for about 5 minutes until it kind of softens up in a little bit of oil. Mm-hmm. And then you make this bacon mix up. And that is made with 2 tablespoons of soy sauce or tamari,
mm-hmm.
1 tablespoon of maple syrup, 1/2 teaspoon of smoked paprika, which kind of gives it a kind of a smoky mm-hmm. flavor, a pinch of chili powder, and then the killer ingredient is 3 drops of hickory smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And all those flavors together. And so you basically make a little kind of really intense flavor mix.
Mm-hmm.
And when that tempeh is hot and in the pan, and then you pour over that mix, it just soaks up all that flavor. And then you keep tossing it around in the pan, so it kind of slightly caramelizes with the maple syrup. You don't want to burn it. And then pot it out and dry, and you've got these little kind of really tasty, salty kind of bacon strips. And they're really nice.
Dude, I've had some replacement bacon as well. Like, I haven't eaten bacon, like, since 2016, so I'm far removed from eating pork products at the moment. But man, I've eaten some replacement stuff, which gives me flashbacks.
Wow, good ones are bad ones.
This sounds cool. This sounds really, really cool. Hey, we got a text message in on the line. Jeremy, Margie wrote in. She said, "What about flavor? Surely the mixture doesn't taste like eggs," and I'm thinking of either the fried egg mixture there or what was the omelette mixture. So surely it doesn't taste like eggs. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you are taking a bit of a similar thing. But don't forget, a lot of dishes you have, you'll consume the other things as well. So, for example, the fried egg, if you put some chili on it or some avocado and toast and things, I mean, it only becomes kind of a third of your mouthful. So, just got to be flexible. And, nothing will ever taste exactly like the taste you get of the urine-infused blood you get with meat. and with eggs and things. So, yeah, it's kind of, you just got to be a little bit flexible, but you're kind of reminiscent of the meat version.
Mm. Absolutely. Hey, look, thank you so much, Jeremy, for amazing information. And of course, a lot of this stuff coming out of your cookbooks, which we have been blessed by on The Breakfast Show.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Some interesting news there, actually. Yeah, regarding what do we call them? The Sydney Two, or, you know, the two nurses from Sydney who got in trouble. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago on The Breakfast Show. And now they're not only, like, yeah, the day after that happened, I remember, because I talked about it just when the story broke, mm-hmm. and then they had their press conference, and it's like they'll never work in health ever again. You know, their licenses have been rejected, and da da da. But now, yeah, they're doing criminal proceedings here, which is hectic.
I mean, fair call.
Yeah, man. Like, nurses can't say they're going to kill people.
Yeah,
in the hospitals. You know, it's pretty wild. It's like, that is a pretty fair
it's
call.
It's like a Hippocratic oath somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Medical I don't specials. Think I have heard. So some people told me that Australians take the Hippocratic oath.
Mm.
And some people told me that they didn't take the Hippocratic Oath. Oh. And so I don't know where we stand on that. I might need to look that one up. Yeah. But do you know anything
about
that?
It's scary going to the hospital if they haven't.
No. No. Well, sure. Yeah, for Israelis right
sure,
now.
Sure. Hey, a few things. Let's start with our quiz. Please, producer Shell.
All right. We're sticking with our give me this
who
person.
Who is this person? Yeah.
Yeah. What priest of Midian was father-in-law to Moses?
Hey, we know this one. We know this one.
Yay,
Ba-boom.
We got it. Okay, this one, would you call this one easy or
easy?
I would say it's easy medium. If you've watched the movie
Prince of Egypt.
Prince of Egypt.
Yes. Which most people have.
If you've read the Bible and if you've watched the movie Prince of Egypt, in terms of, because I think my gauge of easy is like how much common knowledge is it,
that's right?
Because right. There's a thing of like, hey, if you've read the whole Bible, then you're going to know more than someone who hasn't. But if someone, you know, if someone says like, oh, what was Jesus' mum's name? Like, that's a cultural, rather than a biblical question, that's a cultural question.
Yeah.
And I think this one steps into the world of cultural question if you've watched that specific movie, which a lot of us watched even as a non-Christian kid growing up.
Yeah, so. I think that when most people who are not, like, Bible related might know about the Red Sea crossing, that'd be the Moses story that they would know, or maybe the plagues. Yeah. But, yeah, this one is not.
Yeah.
This one's a little bit more obscure
the
as
name.
Far as, yeah, the relationship with his wife and his father-in-law and all that sort of stuff.
Moses' father-in-law, if you know his name, 0491-064-669 is the number to text in for that one. Hey, I also want to read a text message that I read earlier this morning. This was a text message from Hannah. She said, I listen when I'm driving to and from work, and it's a short drive, but I've been listening for 4 to 5 years. But she says, I always find it hard to get the mobile number, you know, to SMS while driving. And it was an interesting text message to me because this was the first time she'd ever text through, in 5 years after listening to the show
she
for 5 years.
Got around to it eventually.
So, hey, we would love to ask you guys, how long have you been listening to The Breakfast Show? 0491-064-669. And we'd love to, especially see if you've never texted us in before. Again, that number, 0491-064-669, and just send me another text message if you want me to repeat that number. But you're listening to The Breakfast Show this morning. Let us know how long you've been listening. We would love to hear it.
Can I just say one thing about the previous quiz question? So there's a new TV show that has come out, and they've just put a pilot episode out recently, and they're making the first series. It's called The Promised Land, and it's about Moses and the Israelites going through the wilderness. And it's based on the humor of, like, The Office or Parks and Recreation. It is... so good. So if you want to go get some biblical TV comedy.
Have you watched it?
I have.
Is
I
it good?
Love it. I've rewatched it like 5 times. So.
Wow.
Is it actually got any accuracy?
Is it biblically like?
Yeah, it is, but it's also funny. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. call me skeptical, all right?
Go watch it then and tell me.
Lindsay, I thank you for the recommendation. We'll see. I'll do the, you know, the Lawson Walters heresy report. And okay. We'll see how it goes.
Lindsay's a heretic.
Hey, all good. Hey, you're listening. What were you going to say, producer Shell?
Janelle has texted in. She's been listening for 7 years.
For 7 years, mate. Janelle. Just locked in, okay? Like, I wonder what the... Because I know Janelle... I know that Janelle is a Queenslander. And if you're a Queenslander listening, you know, man, you've got, like, shifting times for the show and whatnot because our show is kind of based on daylight savings time, so it goes an hour earlier. That is so impressive. Hey, how long have you been listening to The Breakfast Show or to Faith FM in general? Let us know. 0491-064-69. I'd especially love to know if you've been listening for a long time and have never texted in. Again, that number, 0491-064-669. Look, last bit of housekeeping before we get into our Encounter with God section here. 9 Ways to Prevent Diabetes by Donald Hall. Lindsay, do you have diabetes?
No, I don't.
Okay, so you've probably followed some of these aspects in your life.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I'd say so, because I think that a lot of these things, overcoming type 2 diabetes really at the end of the day is up to lifestyle.
Yeah.
If you practice a good style lifestyle, naturally you'll experience prevention from type 2 diabetes. If you don't, you'll get it. Now, again, we're not talking about type 1 diabetes, which there's some really interesting research out there to suggest that type 1 diabetes, there is some lifestyle changes you can make to ease the difficulty of type 1 diabetes. But type 2 is preventable.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So not only is it preventable, but it's also, and this is things that we see in, for example, Sue Rad's cookbook, which we promote here on the show, it can even be prevented and reversed.
Yes, absolutely.
We'd love to give you this book for absolutely for free for either you or maybe you have a friend who needs to hear this. Look, hashtag 9 is the code word to send in to 0491-064-669. I've said that number about 6 times in the last couple of minutes. Let's get into a Bible study this morning. We're going to be picking it up in Matthew chapter 4. This was a passage that I kind of referenced yesterday in our Bible study. We're talking about authority, temptation, power, these kinds of things that Satan endeavors to offer us. Essentially, the story of the Bible that we've seen so far, right? The story that we've seen so far is, firstly, that God created everything, and he created it in the way that he wanted to. He created it perfect. Is that good news, Lindsay?
I would say so.
Yeah, because God's a good guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, absolutely. Hey, so he created everything in the way that he wanted to. But then we got some perspective on Monday when you were here. It's like, hey, but the experience that we now have is that bad things happen.
Yeah.
And the answer that the Bible gives, the initial answer is an enemy has done this. Now, out of that answer, okay, bad things happen, and the answer is an enemy of God has done this. Not God himself, but an enemy of God. Then there's a lot of other lead-on follow-up questions, right? What do you think are some of those lead-up and follow-up questions to, okay, bad things happen in the world, someone's done this. Do you have some questions that float around in your mind,
like,
Lindsay?
Why would God allow that?
Yeah.
Why would God allow Satan to attack us?
Yeah.
Why would he allow children to die from cancer is one I've heard so many times before. Yeah. Right?
Why would he allow Satan to even exist?
Yeah. Why didn't he just like click his fingers and snap him out of existence, you know, right?
Yep. Yeah. Why would he create Satan if he knew he was going to be bad? Like these kinds of different questions come up. It's like, okay, there's an enemy. He's done the bad things, but if he's responsible for it, like, God, where were you in that world?
Exactly. Why didn't you put a stop to it before it all got out of hand?
That's right. And we had been spending some time over the last couple of days answering those questions, seeing, firstly, the origin of Satan being that he was a perfect angel in heaven. And out of jealousy, which is something that can only exist, like, jealousy can only not be God's responsibility or, you know, responsible by God. If there is free choice, jealousy is a natural outcome of having freedom of choice to be, in Satan's case, I would say to have an unholy discontent with the overwhelming abundance of blessings that he had received from God.
Yeah.
Hey, you can be discontent with bad things and want to change them. I would say that's a holy discontent.
Yeah.
Satan had an unholy discontent.
He was in a situation where there was nothing to be discontent about, right?
The only thing that he could be discontent about is the fact that people didn't worship him. And it was out of pride that
he chose to focus on that.
He chose to focus on that, and that has become his entire mantra, which we're going to be looking at today.
Sure.
We saw that, again, he was perfect. He decided to go down this route. He then, you know, takes humanity down that route too. Humanity are convinced by his accusations against God. The question that we answered on Tuesday was, oh, why wouldn't, you know, God just stop Satan, just kill Satan, just take Satan out of existence when it's obvious that he's wrong? And the answer is that, again, it's a universe that has never experienced death.
Mm.
All of a sudden, the prominent angel, the one that's like in the holy mountain with God as a covering cherub, of like no longer exists because he made accusations against God. Like, this doesn't help God's purpose. And forever there would be the question in the minds of all creation of like, oh, is God actually a bad guy? Mm. But what God does is he lets Satan have his opportunity to tempt people. Humanity didn't need to believe in Satan, but unfortunately they did. And this is called sin and pain and death and suffering. And through such a bleak and terrible situation as that, God is proving that he is loving. And he ultimately proves that through Christ. Through what Christ has done for us. He's like, hey, you've put yourself in one of the worst messes imaginable, that you have forfeited eternal life with me. Now I am going to do what I can to restore it. And this is through Jesus dying on the cross. But now we come to this idea of worship and temptation that, that Satan is endeavoring to receive. And we see that clearest in terms of a one-to-one personal interaction in the story of the temptations in Matthew chapter 4.
Mm.
Now, do you think that Satan before this point has been aiming and endeavoring for people to try and to worship, you know, to try and get people's worship towards him?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think of some of the methods that he did that, let's say, in the ancient world?
In the ancient world, so we have God's system of sacrifice of a lamb, but then we have all these other religions where they're doing a human sacrifice, they're doing all this stuff, and that's clearly not aimed to the one true God. That's Satan wanting human sacrifice for himself.
Yeah, and I love what you said there. It's like so clearly and obviously a front for the worship of Satan. And we know this because we know this because the gods that are receiving these sacrifices, and the gods, I say with small g in air quotes because they're not real, but like, you know, the sun god, like Ra, the sun god of Egypt, or Baal, the god of the Philistines,
or even the Aztecs,
Aztecs, or Dagon, or, you know, talk about the Aztecs. Right. It's like they reckon like 1/5 of Aztec population, ancient Aztec population, was like sacrificed.
No
like,
wonder they got wiped out.
It's gnarly as, right? Yeah. It's hectic. Like, but no wonder these gods want human sacrifice, because the system is worship is above all else in terms of the relationship is, hey, I'll give you good things if you worship me. If you appease me, I have this insatiable need for worship, and if you appease me, then I will attempt and endeavor to look after you. And that's exactly what Satan is. He has an insatiable need for worship. This is his one goal from life, like the one thing that he doesn't have the credentials for, because, and we talked about this, only God has the credentials for worship because he created. Satan did not create, and therefore he doesn't have the credentials for worship. The one thing he can't have, he has an insatiable want for, and is doing everything he can to receive it. And for him, it makes sense that human sacrifice is a part of the worship of Satan and the worship of these pagan gods, because that is the most that someone can give. And that's all that Satan wants. Satan just wants more and more and more and more and more. God, on the other hand, he says, hey, like, I don't delight in sacrifice. This is all about you and your condition and realizing that there's consequences for your sins that causes death, right? And that I'll need to sacrifice in order to save you. Satan, on the other hand, he's like, give it all to me.
Yeah.
Give me everything. Give me your children.
Yeah.
Give me your children.
He's very insecure.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then, okay, this is the situation. This is who Satan is in the ancient world. This is what he's looking for. And then we come to the face-to-face battle, the face-off between himself and Christ, where he'll ask, and this is crazy, okay? Because up until this point, he has been endeavoring for angels and beings from other worlds and humans specifically to give him worship. Now he will go to God and ask God himself for worship. Everyone else, and I wouldn't say everyone else, but every other class of people has fallen in some sense to Satan's demands. But what does God do?
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491 064 669.
All right, we come here to Matthew chapter 4. Let's start reading in verse 1, please, Lindsay.
Okay. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. Now when the tempter came to him, he said, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones become bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God."
Okay, let's stop here. All right, so Satan's first attempt here, like, this is so smart. All right, Satan wants worship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Satan wants worship. Satan wants dependence of people in their lives on him and the things that he can do and he can offer.
Mm.
The thing that he tries to do, and we see this blueprinted here with his reaction with interaction with Jesus, how he gets someone to worship him is by first trying to make them compromise on the principles that they already have. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think this is the first step. And this is what's happening here. Because essentially Jesus, he sees, and this is hectic. You're in Jesus' position here. He's been fasting for 40 days. He's incredibly weak. And an angel of light shows up.
Mm.
And you're like, man, it's been 40 days. Finally, respite.
Yeah. From somebody's come to rescue me.
And he gives them the thing here. He gives, and this person says, if you are the Son of God,
ooh,
command that these stones become bread. Again, Jesus, 40 days earlier, heard God from heaven say, "You are my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased." Any angel, any being that's subject to God will recognize that in him.
Yeah.
Okay. And the fact that this angel comes, mm, being Satan,
casting doubt.
Hey, you know, if you really want to prove it, do this.
Are you sure?
Compromise on the trust that you have in God. Like, let's spread confusion and dissent here.
Yeah. And insecurity.
Yeah, I love that. Let's spread insecurity in your own mind. Hey, you know, you need to prove to me now. Jesus sees through this. And like, he already sees, like, hey, no, something isn't right here.
Mm.
Something isn't right here. And he says here, that answer that he said, "Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God."
Mm.
The Bible here doesn't identify until later. This is an interesting point.
Mm.
Jesus doesn't identify Satan as Satan.
Straight up.
But he does see that something is wrong.
Yeah.
And that the accusation that's being brought here isn't from God.
Mm.
Now, you could say Jesus is already making the connection that this is Satan, or potentially this is a test.
Mm.
But again, Satan is here to deceive. And it's the reason I say this is because it's not until verse 10 where he actually says Satan.
Mm.
Where he actually says,
yeah,
Satan.
It's pretty far into the story.
But here in verse 4, he says, "Hey, buddy, like, no. Like, I'm not going to do what you just asked me to do because that's not of God."
Yeah.
Continue to read for us, verse 5.
Verse 5. "Then the devil took him up into the holy city, set him on the pinnacle of the temple, and said to him, 'If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone.'"
Wow. Okay. Mm. And read verse 7 for us.
"Jesus said to him, 'It is written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God.'"
Okay. Firstly, Jesus here flexing his scripture. Satan is flexing his scripture. Jesus is flexing scripture as well. They're going back and forth here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use some Gen Z, Gen Alpha terminology. They're going bar for bar here, which is, I probably shouldn't have said that. It's so cringe. but look, they're going back and forth here. And ultimately, you know, the things that Satan is saying to God, to Jesus here, being God,
yeah,
Jesus is seeing through at the moment.
Yeah.
Another thing that's coming through Satan's temptations is that he's trying to make Jesus act in presumption.
Yeah.
He's not saying disobey God. This is really, and this is what Satan does, right? If you're a Christian, Satan will not come to you and say, "Hey, buddy, disobey God."
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might be thinking this morning, "Oh, well, I don't think I've ever had Satan come to me and say, disobey God, in terms of like the physical manifestation of an angel in front of me.
Sure.
But hey, through messaging, through people, through temptation, through circumstances and whatnot that Satan is trying to orchestrate in order for you to fall, the message won't be disobey God, but the message is, hey, you need to do this for some reason and maybe even do the wrong thing backed up with some level of philosophy that you do agree with. And in this case, he's using scripture to Jesus here.
The ends justify the means type of mentality.
That's right. He's like, act in presumption. You might be listening this morning thinking, what does that word presumption mean? Presumption is essentially the sin of presumption is that you do something assuming that you are doing it for the right reasons, even though it is the wrong thing to do. And it usually comes out of a lack of, you could say, a lack of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason it's called a sin is that you are responsible for that lack of perspective in the sense that you could have asked, you could have considered, you could have thought about it and come to a clearer conclusion.
Yeah.
Whereas, and often presumption is, it's halfway motivated by, oh, this is the right thing to do based on, you know, what I believe. But it's also, there's always an element of selfishness in presumption.
Sure.
Yeah. I think the element of selfishness in presumption in the first temptation is, hey, you need to eat.
Yeah.
You need to eat something. Look after yourself. The second one here is, hey, you know, prove God is real. And and this is Jesus's objective here. Like, he could have acted, so he's like, my job is to prove, you know, that God is real and he's working and he's active and he loves people and whatnot. And he's saying here, yeah, we'll prove it.
Mm.
And he could have, and it's like, oh, well, this is my objective. This is like my goal for my life. I couldn't do that. But Jesus sees here, he says, hey, this would be acting in presumption.
Yeah. Something that really stands out to me is that all throughout the ancient pagan religions, we've got Satan showing up as the sun god, the rain god, the storm god, all these like gods of fertility, all these things, claiming to be able to provide something that God has already provided.
Oh,
And demanding this worship in order to give the thing that God has already provided. And he's doing the same thing here with Jesus, and he does it in our lives as well.
Yeah.
Right? He's showing up saying, you can make this bread to feed yourself if you are the Son of God. He was already the Son of God.
Wow.
He was wanting to prove himself again and saying the same thing, but God has already provided that identity for him. He didn't have to go through it. We don't have to bow to Satan's, trying to get into our heads.
Yeah. I love that point. I love what you're saying, Lindsay, like that, the things that we could possibly think that we need, God already promises to provide.
Mm-hmm.
I love the story, you know, David and Bathsheba. That is a heart-wrenching story.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a heart-wrenching story, and it's basically you've got a faithful, influential individual that has now caused a lot of prosperity in Israel, throwing that away for a one-night stand with a married woman.
Yeah.
Who is, you know, lets his basically lets go of self-control, lets his imagination run wild and takes this woman of a married man. And, you know, you can put this into the category of like, you know, with the power dynamic where she couldn't say no, like,
that's true.
And then killing her husband, you know, like this is,
who was one of David's most faithful men, his general of his army. Like, why would he do that?
Yeah. But what's interesting is that God's response to David is like, when confronted about the sin, is like, what couldn't I have given you?
Yeah.
Like, what couldn't I have given you?
I took you up from nothing as a smelly shepherd.
Yeah.
And now you're the king.
Yeah. What could, like, if you came to me and you asked for something, like, I would have given it, not like Bathsheba. But, you know, I think there's a lot of commentary regarding that particular thing. It's like, you know, his lust for Bathsheba was a reflection of the inner kind of turmoil in his heart. And, you know, he had married all these women and it was causing him grief and pain. And he was struggling to find connection and whatnot. And he decided to take that into his own hands and do something disgusting and terrible. And it's like, hey, if you wanted connection, you know, if you wanted something real, if you wanted real love, you could have come to me, I would have helped you out.
Sure.
You know. Anyways, and this is the experience that Jesus is having here, like on that vein of Satan is trying to offer something to Jesus that he already has, which is his identity. You know, in David's case, he went after something that he already had in terms of identity and love that he could have received from God, but instead tried to receive it through another way. So, interesting thoughts. But now we come to the worship part here. We come to the final aspect. Do you want to read verse 8 from us? And let's just continue to read through to verse 10.
Again, the devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. Then Jesus said to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve. Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him.
Okay, so we now come to this point here, where we see that the charge from Satan, the ask here, hey, just worship me.
Mm. Straight out with it this point.
Yeah, straight out with it, just worship me. And it's at this point where Jesus formally identifies him, he says here, away with you, Satan.
Mm-hmm.
This formal identification. The veil drops here as to what's happening.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Joined by myself, Lawson Gott, my good friend, Lindsay. In the studio, the double L team,
mm-hmm.
and Shell on the desk as well. Shell, our next quiz question, well, an answer to a quiz question, and our next quiz question as well.
Right. Well, Jethro was the answer to our last quiz question.
Yeah. Okay.
The father-in-law of Moses, his name was Jethro.
Mm-hmm.
Our last quiz question might be easier for some history buffs. We'll see.
Okay.
Okay.
Give it to us.
Who is the first hunter mentioned in the Bible? Who is the first hunter? We got correct answers.
This guy has
in
an epic
studio.
Name.
Yeah.
I'll give you a clue for this one. So when I was a wee lad and I wasn't a Christian, I used to listen to this band called Green Day. And I don't recommend you listen to this band, but they have an album with the same title. So if you in a past life ever listened to the band Green Day, they have an album of the same title. anyway, you're listening to the Breakfast Show.
0491-064-669. Who is the first hunter mentioned in the Bible?
Okay. Anyways,
we got a text message.
We do have a text message.
Hey, that helps somebody.
From Emma, she wrote in. She said, "Been listening for about 2 years now. I love listening to the Breakfast Show on my way to work. You guys do a stellar job. Keep up the good work."
Nice.
Emma from Coffs Harbour. Hey, shout out Coffs Harbour, by the way. All of the homies up in Coffs Harbour. Great place to go. Great place to spend time.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, we love that you are having a great time up there, Emma, and that you love listening to the Breakfast
Emma
Show.
Emma Jane.
Let us.
Is her name?
Emma Jane. Okay. Let us know if you have been listening to The Breakfast Show for a period of time, or maybe you've just started listening. Send us a text message, 0491-064-669. You're listening to The Breakfast Show. We are talking to you right now. Come and talk to us. Hey, Matthew chapter 4, where we have been, we've just read this final temptation that Satan brings here. And what does he ask for?
Yeah, he says, worship me.
Yeah, he takes him up and he shows him, it says, all the kingdoms of the world in their glory.
How did he do that?
So my question is, okay, I don't think that it's necessarily, I think this is a case of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John kind of explaining the unexplainable.
Mm.
I think that, you know, because my mind is, oh, man, all the kingdoms of the world. What about, is it all the kingdoms of the world throughout all time? Mm. Like, you know, did he show him, like, New York or something? But it's like, no, I don't think so. Mm. I don't think Satan has that ability necessarily to show him, like, modern buildings and stuff like that. I think more so, I reckon rather than taking him up on one hill, maybe he took him up on multiple hills or multiple high places, or maybe he took him up on a tall hill, like, you know, again, Satan is like a powerful angel that can kind of go anywhere at any time. Maybe he took him up to like a hill above Rome and took him up to a hill above, you know, the big ancient population centers of the time.
Yeah, like it kind of feels like, oh, let me take you on a tour of the entire earth of which I'm in control of. Do you want to have a look at the whole place? Yeah, I can give this to you.
Again, the interesting thing about this temptation is that you could think, there's one side of thinking that's like, oh man, like what does Jesus care about? Buildings and politics and power. Oh, you're going to give me all the kingdoms of the world? I'm going to be a king? Jesus is clearly like, no, like my kingdom is not of this world. Mm. Simultaneously, though, Jesus' mission and goal, I said earlier, is, you know, to prove God right, to prove him true, you know, to reveal God to the people, to show people the Father in heaven. Jesus' goal is to win the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Satan is essentially, Satan's offer here is, I will give you the very world you're trying to win.
It'll be that easy.
Just worship me. You know what, Jesus? And we know that Jesus was stressed about the cross.
Mm.
We know that because, like, on the lead up to the cross, he's, like, there in the garden, sweating blood, perspirating blood, and saying, God, like, if possible, let this cup pass from me, but, you know, let your will be done. Jesus, I think, like, the cross caused Jesus distress.
Yeah.
And it's obviously causing distress if he's sweating blood, but I think throughout his life, like, it would have been something that he would have thought on and gone, definitely, like, man, like, you know, I have to endure the cross, and hey, I need to draw close to God because of it, you know, that, because that is something that is distressing.
Yeah.
And Satan is offering him a way out.
Mm.
You don't have to die. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to be completely separated from God. This is an experience that Jesus has never had, both pre-incarnate and post-incarnate. Yeah. The pre-incarnate Jesus is God. The post-incarnate Jesus is God in human form. He's never experienced separation from God. He's never experienced condemnation on himself.
Mm.
Like, hey, you don't need to go through that, Jesus.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you. You just have to. All you have to do, worship me.
Sound like a good trade-off?
I think many of us in Jesus' position would see some worth there's a classic meme. There's a classic meme. I remember when I first became a Christian, seeing this meme, and it was like, oh, you know, we criticize Judas for selling Jesus out for 30 pieces of silver, yet we sell Jesus out for nothing every single day.
Yeah, basically.
And it's like, you know, we disobey Jesus, we misrepresent Jesus,
definitely.
You know, for our own selfishness here. Jesus had that very opportunity, but what was he receiving? Was he receiving like 30 pieces of silver? Was he receiving, you know, like some money or some friendship or
comfort,
you know,
in life? Any description?
No. The whole world, the whole world, basically, like the apple of like every businessman, every rich person's eye. And if you're in their position,
world domination,
like world dominant, every political system, like the entire world. I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah.
For free. Like,
but just remember for a moment, this is Jesus, this is God, and he's in charge of all of the worlds in the entire universe. This would not be a good trade-off in the ultimate scheme of things.
That's right. And so I think another aspect that we see here is often acting in accordance to Satan's way. We do it not because Satan has anything good to give us that God couldn't give us, but rather we do it because following God's way would be more difficult.
Yeah.
More difficult. Now, that being said, there is nothing that could cause as much pain as being lost.
Yeah.
There is nothing that can cause as much pain as being eternally destroyed and separated from God. Nothing. Nothing can be as painful as that. And that is the ultimate end for humans who choose Satan and don't choose Jesus. You might be thinking, oh, how can they choose Satan? Well, you know, I haven't chosen Satan in my life. But hey, look, if you haven't chosen Jesus, you've chosen Satan. That is just the case. There's no fence sitting. There's no middle ground. It's either you choose to obey the conviction that God has put in your heart, or you don't. That is salvation, and that is life. And Jesus is doing everything he can to, you know, provide the power of the Holy Spirit to work in your heart, to change you, to help you to overcome, to, you know, to show you his love. And, you know, he died on the cross for you, all these different things. But yeah, if you don't choose that, you essentially choose the path of Satan, which is sin leading to death. We see here that the only thing that would inspire you to do so is maybe respite from difficult conditions.
Mm.
Even though God is promising a peace that surpasses all understanding, which I love that, you know, people are like, oh, what's the understanding? I'll be dumb if I receive peace from God. No. The peace that surpasses all understanding is that you understand that you're in a dire situation, maybe one of the most difficult situations that you could ever experience. Yet, like Jesus is here in the garden, yet you experience peace.
Yeah.
Like a peace from God that is over and above. It's almost unnatural. It's supernatural that you'd experience peace in a situation like that. But you do, because God blesses you with that. What Satan offers is something that he does not have, something that he will probably not give you in its entirety, something that will not satisfy, and something that will lead to your eternal death.
Yeah.
And Jesus here, unlike the thousands and the millions of humans before him that fell at some point, even the most righteous of them, the likes of King David, falling, Jesus goes a different way.
Yeah.
And he says to Satan, he says here, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve." And ultimately, he stands in the face of the greatest temptation that anyone has ever been tempted with.
And he was victorious.
And he was victorious. And I love this. This is beautiful. It's revealing of what Satan actually wants, mm-hmm. which is worship, which is good for us to know and understand. But furthermore, we read this verse on Tuesday. Actually, I want to flick over here to Revelation chapter. Mm-hmm. I believe it's Revelation chapter 13. Revelation, not 13. Revelation chapter 12. I'm reading from Revelation chapter 12 and verse 11 here. The Bible says, "And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto death." This is talking about those who resist Satan. And it says here, "They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb." You might be listening, "Oh man, what is this talking about? Mm. The blood of the Lamb? What are they drinking it? What are they rubbing it on themselves? What are they doing with the blood of the Lamb?"
Mm.
Which is, that was kind of a gross image.
Mm.
But look, essentially, this is an allusion to the sacrifice and the work of Jesus.
Yeah.
The blood of the Lamb here is the work that Jesus has done. How did people overcome the temptations of Satan? Through Christ. Yeah. Firstly, Christ is our inspiring example.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, Christ is our mediator, mm-hmm. the one who died for us and loves us. Thirdly, Christ is the one who is promising to work in our heart, to do a supernatural work of change in our heart to help us to overcome. It says here, "They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony." What do you think this means? What do you think about the word of their testimony?
I guess this could be like the stories of each individual Christian who has a personal relationship with Jesus, yep. and who has like stories to tell of how Jesus has helped them in their life to overcome temptations, to overcome character flaws, to just grow to be more like Christ. What about you?
I love what you're saying here. This practically applied in Jesus' situation with the temptations here, the word of their testimony.
Mm-hmm.
You know what this is talking about? This kind of, I never thought about it this way, but it kind of blew my mind. The word of Jesus' testimony is scripture.
Sure.
It's the scripture that he's quoting, because the Bible is the testimony of him, right? It is, the Bible is the story of Jesus's and God's, you know, plan to save the world. And so overcoming by the word of their testimony here is, well, it was Jesus reflecting on what he had done throughout history gone by. And the word of their testimony, I love what you said. It's how we can reflect on the way that God has worked in our life and blessed us in time gone by.
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
Where we are wrapping up the Breakfast Show. We've had a great time here. Lindsay, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Producer Shell, you're right too. Hey, look, give us a quiz answer.
I left you in the lurch there for a moment, didn't I?
nah, you're right. So at the end of the last segment, we're sitting here and we go into that wonderful, you know, chosen road, who am I? And we're like, wait, where's Producer Shell? Oh, she wait, our mics are still on. We're a little
Someone
bit...
had to do a little sneaky tippy-toe walk,
that's
I'm
right.
assuming.
and turn our mics off. But hey,
we had wedding preparation. I was talking with your missus and we had some stuff
hey,
to discuss.
It's all coming together. Hey, give us some perspective on a quiz answer.
Our answer is Nimrod. He was the first mentioned hunter in the Bible.
Yeah, so Nimrod has an incredibly interesting story. Not only is he the first mentioned hunter in the Bible, but he's considered to be the personage of the originator of ancient Near Eastern pagan religion.
Yeah.
Which you could say Satan is the originator of ancient Near Eastern pagan religion.
The human embodiment of
that. But yeah, Nimrod was essentially, and it actually wasn't really Nimrod. Nimrod was like a leader and a hunter and whatnot, but it was more so Nimrod's wife, Ishtar. Because Nimrod dies in battle, because, you know, that's what ancient people do. They go and battle and fight and they die. And Nimrod dies. Ishtar, the kind of queen of their, you know, Mesopotamian
civilization,
civilization or kingdom, then goes, yo, like, I'm pregnant now, but it's been a bit too long since he died. What are we going to do? And the answer to that question, the answer to that question, you know, the great question, how are you pregnant if your husband died and you, quote unquote, haven't got remarried? Mm-hmm. And the answer was, he impregnated me from heaven, from the sun where he's living. Mm-hmm. And so then they start worshipping the sun and start worshipping Ishtar as the moon. And they have the sun named Tammuz and they start worshipping. Yeah, it's.
That's interesting. So pagan religion is really just a cover up for illegitimate pregnancy.
Pretty much.
Wow.
And that, you know, and lots of kids got sacrificed as a result, at least in the ancient Near East.
Yeah.
Sad times. Hey, producer Shell, thank you for that interesting quiz question. And I, Nimrod, crazy guy. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, you're listening to The Breakfast Show and we have fairly and squarely gotten through everything that we could possibly get through and we've run out of time. Wow. With that, we would have maybe lots more to say, but we have Tassie Encounters coming up after this. So guys, you need to stay tuned for that. You'll be incredibly blessed by the team down in Tasmania. We also have awesome Faith FM programming for the rest of the day. What are you getting up to for the rest of your day, Lindsay?
Oh, I've got classes today.
Okay.
And I've got work and then I'm heading up to the prayer conference this afternoon.
Yeah, awesome. A lot of people heading up to the Coffs Harbour area, Stewart's Point, just south of Coffs Harbour. They're going to be spending time in prayer over this weekend. Well, you're going to hear from me this morning. Tomorrow morning, I should say. I'm going to be here. But yeah, look, so many things to do. I've got a Bible study right after this, and I'm really looking forward to it. Cool. We just love sharing the Lord. Amen. We just love being a part of his work, and we love that you guys get to go on that journey with us. And yeah, even reflecting on our show today, I think when we read about Satan, his temptations, it's something that is scary, difficult. Mm. It's something that is incredibly confronting. You know, I've heard it said like this before. I heard it said, if Satan was willing to go up to God and try and tempt him, how much easier do you think it is for him to walk into your church or walk into your life and trying to get you, you know, to pull you away from God? And I think that there's wisdom in that. But simultaneously, what the Bible is also saying is, hey, Jesus has given us a way to overcome. Mm. And that way to overcome is through him.
Yeah.
Jesus doesn't say, hey, guys, actually, I made you good enough. Like, you're really cool and you're really great and you get to overcome Satan on your own. No, he says, you are powerless against this. Come to me. Come to me, all ye who are weary and heavy laden, as he says in Matthew chapter 11, come to me and I will give you rest, I'll give you peace, I'll give you respite, and I will help you to get through these difficulties. Hey guys, talk faith, live faith, act faith, and you will grow strong in Jesus Christ. Have a great rest of your day. Stay tuned to Faith FM.
God be with you till we meet again. God be with you.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.